don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers, episode 10. We've actually reached double figures, chaps.
Get in.
With me, Stuart Court, as ever, is Ross Bell, who again was a better NFL quarterback this week than Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Adam Nathan, who is plotting ways of making Odell Beckham Jr. a Seahawk ASAP. How are we, chaps?
Great, mate, great.
Yeah, not too bad. A refreshing bye week all round.
Yeah, for the most part, anyway. This week's show will be a bit different from recent ones. Obviously, with no game to preview, with the team on a much-needed bye week to rest up bruised knees and ankles. So coming up is a look at this past Sunday's game via the Jets at MetLife, a scan of the world that is the NFL, and a quarter-pole look at the Seahawks season. Also, there will be another Drafting Seahawks profile of a possible 2017 draftee. But first, a few notes from VMAC. Monday saw a few roster moves made. Quarterback Jake Heaps was released from the team's practice squad, and linebacker Mike Morgan was placed on IR after undergoing sports hernia surgery. It seems like it's something which has nagged the former USC Trojan for most of the summer, and also seems to be on the same recovery timeline that Marshawn Lynch was on with the same injury last year. Added in his spot was linebacker Jordan Tripp off of the practice squad. Tripp was a college teammate of backup linebacker Brock Coyle at Montana and has had a few stops in the NFL after being a draft pick of the Dolphins a few years ago. He was a pretty fun player coming out of Montana and interesting to see the role he plays, if active, on game days down the line. Is losing Morgan much of a blow? Adam?
He's obviously a good player, but I think he only played 20-25% of the snaps last week, and he's always the guy that comes out when we're a nickel package, which is obviously much more prevalent in the NFL these days. So, you know, never nice to lose someone who is designated as a starter as such, but if you're going to lose one of your 22 starters, he's probably the one to lose.
Yeah, he's a core player on special teams, and it's probably the reason he's still on the team is all the plays he's made on the special teams since he got into town. Ross, Mike Morgan?
Yeah, if you're going to have to lose one of your three linebackers, that's the one I would pick of the three, certainly.
Yeah, when you put it like that, yeah, that's a pretty... Well, as Adam said, with all the nickel, I think Jeremy Lane is basically our third linebacker at times with how teams are lining up now. The only other roster move saw defensive lineman Sterling Bailey joined the practice squad. Bailey went undrafted out of Georgia and spent time with the Colts this off-season. Now on to week four, and this past Sunday's game versus the New York Jets. A week after the awakening of the offense versus the Niners, that trend continued across the country in New Jersey. The Seahawks certainly beginning to look like the hot offensive unit we saw entering their bye. A 95-yard TD touchdown drive set the wheels in motion. The drive was sealed with a Russell Wilson pass to the newest Seahawk.
Russell looks left first. Now he scrambles. Now he throws to the end zone. Touchdown! Seahawks welcome Mr. Spiller to the great Pacific Northwest. A member of the Hawks, and he catches his first touchdown pass as a Seahawk. An 8-yard strike from Russell Wilson to the back edge of the end zone.
Another 80-yard drive was given its exclamation point with a 42-yard pass finding the all-alone Tanner McAvoy for the walking touchdown. It was quite cool to see the Percy Harvin walk this way for celebration back at MetLife again. Christian Michael catch ended the Wilson TD passes for the day as the Seahawks had a brief scare after a freak play put the lead down to 10, but an all-around comfortable win more so than the scoreline would even suggest. Adam?
Killed him. I mean, I've only watched the game on condensed, which is not an ideal way to watch it because you don't get the benefit of any replays really, or you don't really get the build up of the atmosphere and what's going on between plays. But we just never really seemed troubled after that first touchdown drive. It just seemed we had their number. We knew where Fitzpatrick was going to go the majority of the time. It was so telegraphed when he was going to go to Marshall. We slowed down Matt Forte really quickly and very easily. The check down to Bilal Powell was about all they had, but we said at the start of the year, if someone's going to hurt us, it's probably going to be with little dink and dunks like that. But we just seemed to have their number on both sides of the ball. It was great to watch.
Yeah, it really was. As we said before we started recording, Bilal Powell was... It was edging towards Danny Woodhead a couple of years ago. Ross,
yes,
it's pretty comfortable, wasn't it?
Yeah, very comfortable. Yeah, as soon as Sherman figured out the adjustment on Marshall, that was it. He took him completely out of the game. Enunwa was fairly anonymous. And yeah, Forte was shut down. The check down was their only real weapon. But yeah, so impressed with that run defence, as we have been for years. Yeah, they just don't drop off ever.
Yeah, most definitely. It was a bit of a worry when we saw Jaron Reed's name on the inactive list, but Garrison Smith stepped in quite admirably, really, because as you say, there wasn't much of a drop off, and that's where Jaron Reed has really earned his corn the first few weeks. Mm. So not see any sort of drop off is quite impressive and quite encouraging. Obviously, there was some fun to be had on offense, with some highlight reel NFL top five catches, I think they made, from Jimmy Graham.
Quick throw near side, reaching back, one-handed catch on the near sidelines is Jimmy Graham. He had 5'11 Marcus Williams on him, no contest there, but the back shoulder throw ended up being a back one-handed reception by Jimmy Graham and a gain of 17.
They were two of the more impressive catches you're going to see in the NFL this season, weren't they, Ross?
Yeah, Jimmy's run was spectacular. The adjustment to get back and get that arm out and just bring it into his body was incredible. And the Richardson one, that he was making sure he did not drop that ball, wasn't he?
Yeah,
pulled that into his chest.
That throw and catch to Richardson is the throw of the game for Wilson. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Adam?
I mean, good player in good at football shot. He's amazing. But we knew this.
Yep.
And it's for the first time now we have... clearly a relationship there whereby the snap is made, the pre-snap read is made, and the ball is going to Graham. And the fade to curse that we didn't much like against the Rams, now I think about it now, what we're seeing is a quarterback who has become, as he said, the master of protection, and his pre-snap reads are obviously getting to a level whereby that he now knows where the ball needs to go before the snap is made. He's going through his progressions, and part of that is having Jimmy Graham out there as a sort of safety net that the ball can be thrown up there and he's going to go and get it. And I think that is hugely exciting for our offense going forward.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The first one is a huge, huge play. Because obviously they're backed up after a pretty nothing opening drive, and to do that, just it could not be delivered any more perfectly into Jimmy's breadbasket. Talking about the protection, the master protection, all that. Pete Carroll had a line, I think it was on Sunday or Monday, where he said that this is the first time where we're throwing on play calls which are run plays,
yeah,
which clearly just shows that Wilson is getting more say at the line of scrimmage and knowing what to do. And it's for the last 2 weeks anyway, it's working.
He's getting the ball out in like 2.5 seconds per throw on average, which is Tom Brady level. Yeah. Esque. And if he can do that, you know, the line only need to give him 1 second. They just need to be serviceable and we're on fire.
Yeah. All the line need to do is just win that initial lockup kind of thing, the initial contact, which is what they were doing for the most part. I think, I don't know how many sacks there were on Sunday, but we're at half the number we were through 4 weeks this season compared to what we were last year. So more on Russell Wilson though. He's almost certainly a robot after the recovery he had the last couple of weeks. But he is really starting to push up the upper echelons of the quarterbacks in the league, isn't he, Russ?
Yeah, we've known this for a long time, especially last season and coming into this year. We knew he was one of the top three quarterbacks in the league, and he just shows it. He wasn't massively mobile. I mean, John Lynch was at pains to point out that he was looking ginger in the warm-ups. He had a couple of runs, but he made sure he didn't get hit. He took one big sack, but apart from that, just his presence in the pocket for a man of his stature is incredible. He hangs in there and he takes hits. The hit on the CJ Spiller catch for the touchdown, he took a lick there, and he took one on the, I think it was the McAvoy one as well, was it? He got blasted as well.
No, he's one of the Jimmy ones. Yeah. Sheldon Richardson leveled him.
Yeah.
As he threw.
And he took a big hit as well from Leonard Williams before Williams just got pancaked all over the place by our offensive line for the rest of the game. He's just... How people can still say he's not a top three or five quarterback is beyond me.
Yeah, the argument is becoming weaker and weaker by the day. I think even Pete Prisco, who's been a long-time hater...
He's good, not great.
He's starting to come around to the idea. I think Russell Wilson is very good, Adam.
I enjoy your simplification of the process there, Stu. I can see that by osmosis, my lexicon is clearly rubbing off on you very easily. But there are some games that Wilson has where, sort of, for the rest of the week, you just can't really stop like thinking about it. The game in Philadelphia where Byron Maxwell was amazing, just as a reference point, that game he was brilliant. The Beastquake 2 game in Arizona, Wilson just had a game where I think Chris Collinsworth was laughing by the end of it, playing so well. And this was another one of those games where you just think, we're in such safe hands with this guy here. We're just so lucky to have him. And this was a really seminal game for Wilson. I think he hasn't started the season spectacularly, and he hasn't had much success against really good defensive lines. But just to stand up and be counted in a game like this, I think Michael Bennett did an interview after the game where you could tell he was almost impressed with the toughness. And
you can
sort of understand that he wouldn't be the most popular person in the locker room because of his personality. But when he has games like that, all of that goes out the window. And that's why it's so important that he can do stuff like this, because the respect he must have earned from his team is unmeasurable.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what Mark Robinson said a few years ago after the Chicago game, that this quarterback is a bad, bad man. And he certainly is. As you say, that was one of the more impressive performances from Wilson. I think the game it reminded me of the most in recent years was the Minnesota game, the first one last year, where we just diced a pretty good, as the Vikings have shown this year, it's a pretty good defense they've got.
He made the game look easy.
He made in Minnesota and on Sunday, everything was just precise. It was decisive. I think the play where Doug Baldwin is in motion behind him and it takes out three defenders, and within half a step, the ball's 15 yards downfield to Jimmy Graham. It's very, very impressive on all sides for Russell Wilson. Elsewhere, obviously, on offense, we've got Christian Michael, who I said to Adam the other day is one of the weirdest runners ever. Every run ends in a different way. Obviously, Marshawn Lynch had a really...
You knew what was going to happen every time.
Yeah, repetitive. But if you watch Christian Michael, how he finishes runs especially, every one is different. He's either half an inch off the ground, or he's bowling into people where it looks like he's been pedigreed by the defender and stuff. It's just bizarre.
I love him. He's always smiling as well.
Yeah, always really in pain because he needs to stop getting pedigreed by defenders and stuff. But Christian Michael again... The running game didn't really get going, but 40 yards on 6 catches or whatever it was is a decent output yet again from Christian Adam.
Yeah, I mean, adding the pass catching ability, which I don't think he had before this year, is a huge bonus for us. He just runs so hard. I love watching him, and I love watching Ezekiel Elliott the way he runs. He's got that sort of smooth burst, but in the way that they pick up the gap, it's quite similar. Like, see a gap, zoom, he's just gone. Yeah. It's like watching Sonic the Hedgehog when you hold down and C, and you get the ball rolling and the fire coming out the back, and then you just let go of C, and the guy flies through and then inevitably goes off the end of the river, and it's game over, but whatnot. But that's Christian Michael is Sonic the Hedgehog, is my hot take.
Yeah, nice podcast. Well,
that's the comparison. Ross, Christian Michael?
Yeah, I mean, he got, what, 58 yards against the Jets? And that was 58 hard yards, because that's not an easy line to run on. But he didn't stop. There was one where he got tackled at the line and somehow managed to pick up 6 or 7 yards. He just kind of barreled forward and rolled a few times and didn't touch the floor. He's really good. And you add Spiller to that mix and Rules when he gets fit. That's a nice 1-2-3 punch now.
Yeah, it is. Definitely is. But I think CJ Spiller is just a bookmark until pro size.
But he looked quick, though, didn't he? His cutting ability.
He really did. The touchdown, how quick he was with his on the touchdown was quite impressive. Although I think he had like 8 snaps, I think, on Sunday.
I think he had a 12 or 13 yard run where he just killed 3 or 4 defenders and just ran up the middle.
Yeah, the only problem was it came on like 3rd and 44. Or
yeah, that was an issue.
Yeah. Elsewhere on offense, obviously, the O-line has been a focus point for everyone. Pro Football Focus still rating this as the worst O-line in the league. It didn't look like the worst O-line in the league on Sunday, though, did it, Ross?
Just ask Landon Williams what he felt like if he was facing the 32nd worst. There's a highlights package of him getting pancaked. I think it was Britt most of all. I think Glowinski got one as well that they couldn't get through. He got through once, I think, on a Fetty that missed his block, and he made Wilson pay for that. But yeah, they just gave Wilson enough time every time to do what he needed to do. Brilliant.
Yeah. The run game obviously was struggle, but
any run game was struggle against.
Yeah, you're not going to overwhelm that D line.
No.
Ross, Adam, O line.
Yeah, last year we had obviously another sticky start with the offensive line, and I think against the Bengals on the road, obviously it all ended in a bit of a crap sandwich in the last game, the last quarter. But the offensive line, I was watching it and I was thinking, all they need to do is just be serviceable, like just do this. We don't need you to be Dallas because we have enough playmakers around, and you know, Wilson's a good enough quarterback and we have a good enough defense. Just don't be
catfish,
basically.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I think for me on Sunday, all 5 of them had one or two plays where it was a bit, okay, yeah, there they are. I think obviously Bradley Sales was when he was thrown aside by one of the defenders. Glinski had the Leonard Williams sack where he just stopped blocking him. He blocked him for a few seconds and just stopped. Justin Britt had a few lunges forward. Ifedi had a false start or a hold, and obviously his first game, so that's expected. And Gilliam had his couple of went the wrong way on a couple, it seemed. But it is getting there. It's getting there a lot earlier, about 6-7 weeks earlier than it did last year. Mm. And we're in a healthy position in the win-loss column
We've got a bye week now, and then we have to face the Falcons' non-existent pass rush.
Oh, I tell you what, Vic Beasley worked the Carolina Panthers' O-line on Sunday. That Panthers team, oof.
We double-team him, man, we're fine.
Yeah. Tanner McAvoy, Adam. That was a bit of a shout, wasn't it, a few weeks ago?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't expect him to be catching 44-yard touchdown passes every week, although that would be a nice bonus. But yeah, I mean, look, it's quite nice when you watch a guy in the preseason and you think maybe there's something there, and then that translates itself to actually on the field. He had, you know, a couple of really nice plays last week that won't get spotted, but, you know, or talked about, but the block was really cool. Michael's touchdown, he saved the pick 6 with a good tackle. And, you know, it's really nice when you see players that you think they have something, and it sort of gives you a nice sort of justification and vindication for making all these predictions when a guy that you think is good turns out to do some nice stuff.
Yeah, and a lot earlier than we probably all expected as well. Before we move on to the defensive side of the ball, they really should have sat Russell Wilson, shouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, just negligent all round from the coach.
I mean, was it 78% completion, 320 yards passing, 3 touchdowns? I mean, what were they thinking, really?
I know, he clearly wasn't ready to play. So, that's a poor decision from the coach.
Most definitely. I think, hopefully Pete Carroll, the Weber Bevel, on Monday morning.
Just before we hit
Paul
the
Allen
defense.
Might have to step in. Paul Allen might have to step in and get the... start wielding the axe, because this is just not acceptable behaviour from the coaches.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when Matt Ryan throws 180 more yards than you know you've made a mistake. Ross?
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to give a massive shout-out to Doug Baldwin for that catch and the hit that he took after that. To hold on to that ball is phenomenal. And he's taken over that Marshawn Lynch leader role. Like, he's the emotional heart of that offence, I think.
Yeah, that agree. He's the vocal side of it, obviously.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is quite... one beat, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, with all how he... But yeah, I definitely agree with that. Defensively, then, Sherman against Marshall was Pacquiao against Mayweather, wasn't it? That was a scrap and a half out there, Adam.
Yeah, it was good to watch. I mean, as I said last week, Sherman is at some point going to give away a touchdown and everyone's going to get on his back and say that he's rubbish and this, that, or the other. But what a way to shut them up by giving up, like, 0.0001 yards per throw to Marshall and Fitzpatrick in the second half. The second half was just a complete masterclass. And you're almost happy that they got that pass interference call because it set up the chance to for that back shoulder fade throw that was the interception where Sherman basically ran Marshall's route for him and Marshall ran Sherman.
Yeah, it was Lynch and Burkhart in the commentary were almost like telling us, look, it's going to happen if they keep doing this. I think he was targeted 12 or 13 times on Sunday and he gave up five catches for 70 yards. And obviously the touchdown where he was bullied by Brandon Marshall, but it's Brandon Marshall. He's a legit receiver. Ross?
Yeah, he's just phenomenal, isn't he? If he could get, I mean, he could have had three picks. That one, I thought he'd done it 2 weeks in a row where it just touched the floor and he caught it and ran away with it. He's done a pretty good job at tricking people. But yeah, he just absolutely, second half, he figured it out and he absolutely smothered Marshall and he couldn't do anything about it. He couldn't do anything to stop him.
Yeah, it really was quite impressive. Obviously,
I said to you, Stu, if he was targeted like a normal cornerback, he would have, by the end of the season, more than a pick per game, without question.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, he had two on Sunday, and he could have easily had three if he fell down about a yard earlier than he did. I mean, also on defense, Earl Thomas probably had the funniest moment of the game when he shouted down the referee's mic that the hand went forward. It was brilliant. But yeah, he certainly looked like his old self. Didn't look like he was resting on his big contract and all the rest of it. Ross?
No, he was flying around the field like he always does. And he was great interception. And I love the fish out of water celebration that he did on the floor, not flopping around. But yeah, he's finally got his pick. Sherman's got two picks. Chance is lagging behind in the picks this year, but he'll get some as well. And the whole LOB is just, they've been what we know they are all season. And this is the first time any quarterback's really tested them, and then what happens? Three picks.
Yeah, but it could have been easily, as I said to Adam, it could have easily been six against Fitzpatrick with a few tip balls not quite going high enough and far enough. Mm. Right, one to praise. We probably praised everyone, but anyone else on offense to praise? Adam?
Offense, anyone else to praise? Who am I thinking here? Well, fair play to CJ Spiller, who was in church and on his couch the Sunday before and had, I think, six flights between Sunday to Sunday, and he gets a touchdown grab. That was really cool. The offensive line were very, very, very improved against a good team. So I think it was a really good team effort. And even JK15 had a couple of nice grabs.
Yeah, and he was lined up against Darrell Revis and got those grabs as well. So he was worth the money just for beating Revis. For me, it is the coaches, I think. I think Darrell Bevell absolutely called a pearler on Sunday. As I said, with the play to Jimmy Graham when Doug Baldwin, all he did was went in motion and it took out three defenders, and in a half second the ball is in Jimmy Graham's hands and chest and numbers and all that. It really, really did get that defense on their heels and everything. So I think I owe Tom Cable an apology. I may have jumped the gun a couple of weeks ago putting all the blame on him, because the O-line is looking serviceable when you've got an actual NFL player right guard and Afedi who looked really good. So I think the coaches on offense deserve quite a bit of credit, because they were never really troubled by the defense. The ball was never really in the air and in danger of being picked off. The run game was relatively safe, but they still managed to put on three touchdowns and three 70-yard-plus drives and all the rest of it. I mean, the first touchdown drive is 95 yards in seven plays, and the first play loses 3 yards. So it was really impressive all round from the coaches. Ross, offense?
Yeah, just a little bit more on the coaches. The game plan, 32 passes, 26 rushes. That's beautifully almost even for me. That's how you should be playing football. And obviously getting the lead helps that. But Paul Richardson doesn't do a lot in the games, but what he does, he's that one big, massive play threat at the minute while Lockett's out. And that catch was phenomenal. I just keep watching it on YouTube.
Yeah, it is. That is the best. I know Jimmy Graham got all the highlights and plaudits, but that throw and catch is an absolute bullet. And there's no other person catching that apart from Richardson.
No.
Anything for the coaches for you, Adam?
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching that offense. I mean, there were quite a few little pitches to the running backs instead of handoffs. Everything was just a little bit more inventive. And we were discussing that, having watched the Huskies demolish the Stanford Cardinal on Friday, just it was a normal game plan, but there were just some interesting little flick passes to running backs and just, I don't know, just taking things. What's the word? I don't know what the term I'm looking for is. It just being 5% more inventive just seemed to open so many different things up. And hopefully, you know, we're going to need it against teams like Atlanta, which is going to be a big point scoring game. But yeah, just opening things up ever so slightly everyone seemed to really relish playing in it.
Yeah, with the Huskies on the Friday night, I think Jared Stanger pointed out that the spiller was like one of Jake Browning's throws.
Yeah, Texas.
To Pettis on Friday night. And also the one I noticed was the option run when on third and one or second and one or something, and Michael had half the field to himself. Cause
yeah, that was great.
That meant that they did that three or four times on Friday, the Huskies did. On defense, Adam?
We're going to do a little true or false thing later, but I think I have one in advance. True or false, DeShawn Shedd is already the best non-Sherman, Thomas and Chancellor member that LOB have ever had.
True.
Browner was quite good, but he has a higher, like, more potential than Browner did, obviously, but
he Browner made three great plays. Oh. That was one brilliant pass breakup on Anderson, I think it was, which was just a glorious, glorious bit of cornerback play. You know, he now looks like he could be a top corner on any other team.
Yeah, most definitely. He was an undrafted free agent out of a really small school, Portland State. He was cut, I believe. He was practice squad, and then he was on the active. He was practice squad, and he was cut. He was practice squad, and then he was given a bonus, which is not usually given to practice squad guys, basically to keep him here. And then obviously he got his chance probably end of the last Super Bowl season, I think he did. And obviously last year, then he's just come on so much. And he's also so versatile because he can play almost every spot along the defensive backfield, which is a really, really cool thing to have. Someone who is so young, relatively, in NFL terms. But yeah, DeShawn Shedd is my defensive standout outside of the people we've mentioned. But Ross?
Yeah, I mentioned him last week and it's massively obvious, but Bobby Wagner. I said he was 1B to Luke Kuechly's 1A. He's 1A. He is the best linebacker in the whole league. Someone prove me wrong. 10 tackles, 6 solo tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, 1 sack, and 2 more QB hits. The man's a monster.
Kuechly is quite good, though.
He is. He's 1B this week, though. He got flamed by the Falcons. That's not going to happen to Wagner. Just you watch.
I'm not. We'll get onto the Falcons Panthers game later because it was hilarious watching that defense at times. Also for me, I think Michael Bennett. The worst mistake the Jets made on Sunday was their lineman who ear-holed Bennett. He just was so fired up for the rest of the game.
He gave himself
lit,
a concussion.
As they say for the rest of the game. Is that what he did?
He gave himself a concussion. Yeah.
I missed that. Anything else of note from the game, guys?
Just that defense overall, it's just swarming. There's no room for anyone, bar a couple of plays by Marshall.
It's purring like a sports car, isn't it?
Yeah, and it just...
Yeah, it's quite fun to watch. Right, now for another Drafting Seahawks profile.
The Seattle Seahawks select Earl Thomas.
Slings over the middle, and it's kicked off! Intercepted by Earl Thomas!
Bobby Wagner.
Here's a handoff and a fumble. Here's Wagner, back for the touchdown, Seattle.
Bruce Irvin.
He's out. John Kuhn's the back foot. He's a good pressure on the first round pick. Bruce Irvin sacking Rodgers.
Davis, and a deep ball for Davis. Looking for Crawley. Oh. Suddenly, he caught the back shoulder.
Odell Beckham Jr., you've got competition, my friend.
An all-around athlete. He's going to pass on first down. Trying to take a deep shot himself. He's got a man, and it is caught! Touchdown! Courtland Sutton, what an answer!
Oh, my!
by Sutton with the grab. Off the
so team. With this series, we will look at 2017 draft eligible prospects and see if his game and fit is something which will suit the Seahawks. The first one came from Gordon Wright a few weeks ago, and that looked at Oregon running back Royce Freeman. This is one of my early pets for this year, and it comes in the form of SMU wide receiver Cortland Sutton. So, yeah, Sutton is a 6'4", 215-pound wide receiver. He is the focus and by far the best player on a relatively poor Mustang offense. Before this past weekend, all four passing touchdowns SMU quarterbacks have thrown in 2016 were to Sutton. He's a redshirt sophomore, but in his third year, so he is draft eligible, but not a lock to declare like Royce Freeman. But though, like Freeman, it is advisable as his stock with that offense can only go so high. Through five games a season, he already has three 100-yard games, almost 1,400 yards and 13 touchdowns for the Mustangs over his career. He is just a pure playmaker. SMU has produced a few notable wide receivers over the years. Most recently, Denver Broncos wideout Emmanuel Sanders. Sutton, though, is a different animal to Sanders. He has all the roots and in his arsenal and could be a matchup nightmare wherever he ends up. In Seattle, with what we've seen the past 2 weeks, just imagine that. Draft stock is a bit cloudy at this point, but again, a late day one or early day two pick on Sutton with his upside would make sense for the drafting team. Adam?
He looks great. I mean, it's going to be a bit of a push to say that we should be giving up any early picks to positions like receiver, given that we are fairly strong in depth there and we've got good players in the practice squad that maybe could come on next year. But I don't know if you want my pro comparison now, but we were saying earlier that we've since the Wilson era started, the one thing that people have always called for is that big-bodied receiver to go up and get the ball. And, you know, Sidney Rice was that, but we've had people like Kevin Norwood, Chris Matthews, that people have thought, oh, is this the guy? But just this guy, as I was saying to yesterday, he reminds me of AJ Green, that you can just fling the ball into the corner and by the pylon or the back of the end zone, he's going to go up against one or two guys and get it for you. And, you know, that sort of player in our team could be frightening.
Yeah, he can do, and he can stretch the field. He can be that big time red zone tag, which AJ Green is. For me, the pro comp for me is Steelers wide receiver Martavis Bryant, without all the off field baggage. His head coach at SMU was the wide receiver and offensive coordinator, I think it is, at Clemson when Bryant was there, and Sammy Watkins and DeAndre Hopkins were all there as well. And it is Bryant, which of all those he reminds me of. That big body target all over the field. Just you hope if he is like Bryant, he doesn't come with all the off-field stuff. anything to add or ask on Sutton or anything else, guys?
I haven't seen him play, but the comparisons you two have both made, I would happily take a player of that kind of ability or likeness on our team, certainly. Who would you... Obviously, for Adam, I know who he would have him replace, but who would you have him replace, Stu?
To be honest, probably the same person Adam would. Because I think if Lockett and Richardson can carry on like they are, I think all we need then is that big body. Also, we've got Jimmy Graham who can line up outside. But I do definitely think that he would see his snap count even... Curse, that is.
Yeah.
Would see his snap count even reduce. And I saw, I think, someone... Charlie Campbell, I think it is, on Walter Football, which is a mock draft central, basically... his one he posted yesterday, I believe, has us taking Sutton at the back end of the first round, which would be hilarious because we've called him out so early on in the process, but that would be really cool to see. But as Adam said, wide receiver in the first round is possibly not what we need at this stage. As ever, with this, we are looking for an assist for players to focus on from you guys. So get in touch. We'll be doing this intermittently throughout the season and up until the draft at the end of April. Now, with no game, obviously, for the Seahawks, is the one of bye week. There is no game to preview. That will be next week as the offensive powerhouse, that is the Atlanta Falcons. There's a sentence I didn't think I was saying a month ago. Come to Seattle and CenturyLink Field. So if you watch any game this weekend, key in on how they look, as it could set our wild aspirations on a back burner, because they did, as Adam can attest to, looked like a fun and a very good offensive unit on Sunday versus the weird looking Carolina Panthers, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, watching their offense, the way in which they rotated their running backs, the way in which they used the run game, the vertical pass game, apart from us not having a player like Julio Jones, they sort of look like us on offense, with a lot of play action. They were really fun to watch. If anyone has Game Pass out there, I really couldn't advise anything more than dialing up that game against the Panthers, largely because it's hilarious seeing Cam play so badly and then just being sliced and diced all over the field. But Atlanta, aside from the fact they're a rival, are just a fun team to watch.
There's not many teams have got a player like Julio, are there?
No, there's not. There's very few players in the league like Julio. But yeah, the Panthers, as I said to Adam yesterday, when we were both watching it on condensed, they went with a bold strategy of not bothering playing safeties from all accounts. They only went. They were clearly not playing 11 on defense.
Revolutionary.
It was just far too easy. There's a catch which Julio Jones makes in traffic, and then runs 60 yards untouched for a touchdown. I mean, 300 yards on 12 catches for a receiver against the. I mean, the defense did help him out a lot last year. I guess that defense is, if you're a Panthers fan, it's worrying. If you're a Seahawks fan, as we are, it's quite funny because of how. I think Cam Newton even got flagged for taunting when he did his first down jig or whatever he does and all that. But
he also got a massive shot to the head as well,
which he fully deserved for trying to goad his way into the end zone. Most definitely.
The thing you have to watch is that they, unlike what I've been slating New York and Eli Manning not doing for the past week, they forced the ball to the number one guy. And, you know, Julio, 12 catches, but they just insist that he's going to get the ball and be the guy. Yeah. So in a way, it's quite good to know that that is who you have to cover, because if you are covering him, you're going to get a lot of balls. So we'll obviously get into this a lot more next week, but it wouldn't overly surprise me if he's taken by Deshaun Shedd and has safety cover as opposed to Sherman, who I imagine will be on someone like Sanu.
Yeah, because also the Falcons defense, Trufant absolutely shut down. I think we had 2 catches, I think, Calvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
So that's something to watch with our...
Well, I mean, Calvin's the ball three times, about 20 feet above his head, 15 times.
That's a very good point. There's mechanics needed work, I think, this week. But at the quarter point, though, of the Seahawks season, what is the overriding feeling for the 3-1 Seahawks? Russ?
Very optimistic. I had us at the slightly more optimistic 15-1 at the end of the season with a loss to the Rams. We've got that loss to the Rams out of the way. So we're just going to win every game from now on, boys. Strap in. It's going to be fun.
Adam?
I think I am a mixture of impressed and relieved. I didn't expect us to be in this position, having had the injuries that we faced, the crap show against the Rams. I didn't expect us to bounce back quite so well. And as I said, I didn't expect us to win on Sunday. So we're sitting pretty at the minute, and especially with the records of Arizona and Carolina that will hopefully be extended this weekend, the things are looking good.
Yeah, most definitely. I think I'd have had us at 3-1 at the bye, but I'd have put the loss coming against the Jets.
Yeah, same.
Because I didn't think they'd look like they did. On defense, especially on Sunday. So really couldn't have asked for much else. So I am quite optimistic how this team is shaping up on the offensive side of the ball. Defense looks the same. But I think there's a few articles somewhere, I think might be Sports Illustrated, say that we're the most dangerous team in the league. So that's quite fun to read at this early stage.
Well, NFL.com have done their quarterly poll. They had us ranked 1 before the season. We're currently ranked 3rd behind the Broncos and the Patriots. I think that seems pretty much fair.
Yeah, definitely the Broncos are the best team in the league with that defense, and all they need is a serviceable quarterback, which Paxton Lynch probably is. But the next few weeks, the schedule softens up somewhat with a couple of home games, and obviously we've got the Saints defense to have fun against. Yeah. The O-line's obviously going to improve with the Fetty getting his legs under him, and you've got all the players getting their health back, Doug Tyler and obviously Russell as well. Could be quite a scary proposition on offense. Anything league-wide, Ross?
Yes, I've been doing a thing for a website called firstand10.co.uk, true or false, basically, where we put out five or six true or false questions, and then a bunch of us have to give our thoughts and answers to them. So I thought we could do that on the podcast. Shall I go first and tell you, kind of ease you guys into it?
Yeah, go on, sure. Then.
Yeah, we've all selected two divisions each. I've gone for the Norths, AFC and NFC. So I'm going to start with this one. The Bears are a better team with Hoyer at quarterback than Jay Cutler.
Adam, do you want to take that?
I think that is probably true. I think that Cutler is just a coach and coordinator killer.
Yeah.
And whether or not he might be a slightly better quarterback than Brian Hoyer, I just think the atmosphere that Cutler brings to a locker room, to a huddle, is bordering on cancerous. It just doesn't seem to work with him around. And I have to say, I was amazed that a couple of years ago, after the success that Jimmy Clausen had in the few games towards the end of the season, that they then went and gave Cutler an enormous extension. I really think that was a... You look at the state of their roster now, that really was a huge mistake for them to make. And I'm amazed that they still have so much locked up in Jay Cutler.
Yeah, most definitely. That contract is an anchor. I think I agree. I think they are a slightly better team with Hoyer. Hoyer's not a quarterback who's going to set the world alight. But if you look at the Texans' offense, is the 32nd offense by DVOA, which is something Seahawks fans go mad about because we're always at the top of it on both sides of the ball. But the money if they were to give that money to Hoyer, half that money to Hoyer in Houston, that offense and that team would be in a better state of affairs than they are right now. So, yeah, I think that's true.
Excellent.
It will be interesting to see what they do in the offseason because there's a couple of quarterbacks which could be quite fun.
Yeah, and the Bears could have a pretty high draft pick as well.
Yeah, looking that way.
My other one then for the AFC North. The Cleveland Browns are a better team than some of the 3-1 and 2-2 teams in the league this year.
What teams in particular?
Well, Indy, Chicago, Washington especially, I think. Cleveland have been in all of their games this year, and there's been silly mistakes, I think, that have cost them wins. And I think Hugh Jackson's... He's got something to work with there. If they can stick with him and not pull the trigger on him so early, like they tend to do with coaches, he can kind of start something in Cleveland.
I'm going to go false. I think Washington are a better team. They just need a better quarterback. Indy are a better team. They just need a proper coach. Chicago, as we just said, I think Chicago are probably level with Cleveland, which is how far Chicago fell, because they've got some pieces on offense and the defense have got a couple of players, but there's too many holes for that team to be good. But
fair.
I think the Browns are one of the worst teams in the league, even taking into effect the Josh Gordon situation, Coleman, all the injuries they've had, and obviously the Johnny Manziel, whatever is going on there as well. But yeah, I think they are one of the worst teams in the league.
Manziel's been reinstated this week.
Yeah, but still unemployed.
Yeah, no one's going to pick him up.
I think they're clearly rubbish, the Browns. But in a way, I would be more hopeful about being a Browns fan now than at any point in the last 3 or 4 years. Because I think for the first time, they're actually in games and they're close. I know they had a good run when Brian Hoyer was the quarterback in the Josh Gordon year.
Yeah.
They look pretty decent. But I think Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown are putting together not an atrocious roster now that you can probably hang your hat on a few players that look decent. And the reason they're probably not better than these teams like Washington, Miami and Chicago is that they have no like clutch or winning gene in them whatsoever. I mean,
yeah,
they missed 3 field goals against Miami. They fumble the ball way too many times, even if half the fumbles aren't actually real fumbles.
That's the most amazing thing I've seen.
Incredible. But I think if they can have another good draft, because I think overall they did have a decent draft last year, they're probably going to be building something that in 2 or 3 years time is going to be much better than anything we've seen of Cleveland in the last half decade.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they've already got double figure worth of draft picks for next year.
Yeah.
And it is looking a decent draft class already.
And their record only one game worse than the Cardinals.
Yeah. they might be starting having quarterback questions also. My true and false, I've got the two Easts. NFC first, Jerry Jones is the most underrated general manager in the league.
Ooh. I can't agree with that because of how much he promotes himself and how much he dictates everything that happens, I think, in that team. He has kind of restrained himself in recent years because obviously he wanted Johnny Manziel, didn't he?
Well, he says he does.
That would have been hilarious.
That just got clicks and views on YouTube and stuff. I'm not too sure about that.
I'm sticking with false. I think there's probably others.
Okay. Alan?
I'm just trying to rack through all of them in my head. I certainly don't think he's the laughing stock that he was billed to be a couple of years ago. Yeah. There's been quite a lot of intelligent draft picks. As you say, the pick not to take Johnny Manziel was a smart one. But even now, I mean, he's just he claims he wanted Paxton Lynch and then he didn't. And then he took Dak Prescott, who apparently he wanted more than him. So you don't know if he is or isn't because you don't know what is method and what is complete and utter madness that falls into his lap. So what I would say is that his picks over the last couple of years have been right up there. But whether or not he's actually good at what he's doing because it's there's a thought process behind it, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think drafting-wise, he is probably one of the more underrated ones. People just dismiss it as Jerry being Jerry kind of thing.
Yeah, he's had some terrible picks, like Maurice Claiborne and people like that. But
well, Claiborne is playing out of his skin this season. He's playing really well. And he obviously got the entire line was draft picks, I think, apart from Doug Free. I don't know if he's still there. You obviously got Dak Prescott was probably a bit of a flyer, but it's worked out well. Ezekiel Elliott was a slam dunk home run.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily going to be. I mean, he took a bit of heat for taking Elliott because of the problems they had in defense. To take a nut, having just picked up Alfred Morris, the old Raiders running back, Darren McFadden had a good year for them last year.
Yeah,
so he took a bit of heat for taking Elliott, but he is a star.
Yeah, most definitely. But I think Jerry Jones is underrated. I think all these other shenanigans and how he always wants to be. I mean, look at the size of that stadium. It's the only thing that can house his ego, I think. But in making decisions as a general manager or whatever his job title is, I think he is quite underrated. But I also think our GM's quite underrated as well. So. AFC East, the Buffalo Bills are a playoff dark horse, even with Rex Ryan as their coach. Adam?
False. partly because they've got Rex, who is, you know, even now he's firing off an Aaron Donald this week. I mean, he's just a dumb. Just so, so needless. The reason I don't think that they will is that I think that divisions like the NFC North could well have three teams in the playoffs. And obviously the Patriots are going to win the East. And so I don't think Buffalo will be able to compete with the number of wins racked up by the NFC North.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Ross?
Yeah, I've got to agree with Adam. It's not just Rex, it's Rob as well. The two of them combined is just a disaster waiting to happen. And the defense has been all right in the last couple of games. They've got some impressive wins, but how impressive is it? A 16-0 win against a third-string quarterback with a disabled Gronk running around the field. It's not a huge victory. So, yeah, it's going to be tough to match the record to some of the wildcard teams.
Yeah, I agree. I do think they might be in the shout. I think the offense looks quite good. If Shady McCoy stays healthy, now they're not worrying and panicking over if Sammy Watkins is going to make it week to week. They've just kind of shut him away for probably the rest of the season. I do think there will be a playoff dark horse because I think teams like the Ravens will fall away. The AFC, the South, is an absolute abomination. Yes. The East is probably only going to end up being the Patriots as ever. And the West... The Chiefs look really, really bad on Sunday night against the Steelers. The Raiders have issues, although Derek Carr? It's his quarterback. Yeah. I always get those two mixed up. Carr looks like a really good quarterback. I think they're still too far behind the Broncos, and that Broncos team is good. So I do think I would not be surprised if they're number six in the wild card come January 10th or whenever it is. Next year. Before we wrap up, I have actually forgot that Adam needs to ask some true and false questions. So, Adam, I apologise and go ahead.
Apology not taken, but we will carry on anyway. So, my question one is the AFC South has the worst coached team in the NFL in the Tennessee Titans and the worst run team front office wise in the Indianapolis Colts.
True and true.
False, because both of those are the Colts.
I don't know, I take Malarkey as a worse coach than Pagano.
No, Malarkey's he is. Terrible. Pagano is a charlatan.
Tennessee actually have good players on offense that they're just not using because Malarkey's so boring.
I have a Titans friend who listens to this podcast, and he's just the state of the way that this team is being coached and the players they're not using, and Mariota is progressing week by week.
Okay, now you've put it like that. I do think the Colts are the worst run coached ever since team. They've got some good players on both sides of the ball. Not many, but they've got some. And I just think it's an absolute abomination. Especially how bad the other two teams look in that division as well. But I think it's both the Colts for that, for me.
Fair enough. And my second question, the NFC South, is that the win column from top to bottom in the NFC South will be the closest of all the divisions in the NFL?
I think you're right, yeah. Because they're all beating each other, aren't they? So no one's going to get
I can't see a team getting less than 6 wins in that division.
No. It was fairly close. Well, obviously, apart from the Panthers, it was fairly close last year between the other three, wasn't it? So, yeah, I think it could be all of them around like 8-8, 9-7, that kind of final scores.
I'm going to go false because I think the AFC East will be that. It was last year. I think it will be again. NFC East.
Oh, NFC East. Okay.
Yeah, with the Giants, Eagles. I think Eagles are going to drop off because Carson Wentz is a rookie. He's not. He's going to hit. He's going to have a drop off eventually. I think they will be tight, but I think the NFC East basement team are probably the Redskins or the Giants.
Well, we'll at least get to watch every single one of those NFC East games on Sky.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
Al Michaels and Collinsworth. I think NFC East, because I think Tampa Bay are further behind the other three than any one team is behind the other three in the East. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So next week will be a longer show, obviously, as we look ahead to the Week 6 game versus Atlanta, already at Week 6, and what that offense brings for our defense to stop, and what Wilson, Doug, Jimmy and co. will go up against with Dan Quinn's familiar defense. All that with, and I know I keep saying this, but schedule conflicts are delaying it. Our chapter prez, Sean Wilson, will hopefully be coming on to pester Adam Nathan and enjoy the lack of a winning smile Cam Newton is currently showing for the bizarre Panthers. But in the meantime, Ross, where can they find us and also help us run this podcast for the foreseeable?
The mystery man, Sean Wilson. You can find us on thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. While you're there, you can download the podcast so you can listen to them just on the site. You can follow us. Give us a little follow. There's a follow button on the left-hand side. That's always good. There's also a donate button on the right-hand side, which everything you donate to us goes back into helping the show sound better, get better, give us more time to do the shows. And I'm going to have to teach these boys how to record their own audio at some point in the future so our sound quality goes through the roof. That takes time and a little bit of money as well. So it'll all go back to helping the show. You can find us on Twitter at SeahawkersUK. And if you download us from iTunes, please leave a 5-star rate and review. And if you do, we'll give you a little shout out on the podcast.
Yep, that's all we've got time for this week. We'll be recording at some point next week, obviously the preview. But thank you very much for listening to this week's episode. This is the Pedestrian Podcast, and go Washington Huskies.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 40.